He got a distant look.
Remember, launching mass into space is expensive. With the amount of energy it takes to launch a single human, you could get thousands of everything killers into orbit. They'd be too small to show up on most radar. If you could get even a few of them into the vicinity of the Dabinernud...
Yeah, I can see the strategy clearly. Which leads to the profoundly sickening thought,
are we going to be asked to deliver these things?
Leo said.
I think the answer is no. If anything, we are going to be a diversion.
We'll distract them, I translated, while some other technique is used to deliver the everything killers.
Leo nodded. Well, that's inspiring, I said. He shrugged.
I could be wrong,
he pointed out.
I felt like going outside and getting some fresh air, in lieu of which I walked up and down the aisles for a bit.
Jules Verne Durand was asleep. Next to him, Saman was bent over his G-jaw.
But I thought it was jammed.
Looking over his shoulder, I saw he was making some sort of calculation. Looking over Jessery's, I saw that he was, indeed, reading the manual for a spacesuit. This demanded a double take. But it was as simple as that. Sourve was in an adjoining row, poring over many of the same documents, swapping them with Jessery from time to time. The other Veilers were asleep. Fra Jad was awake and chanting, though my ears were hard put to disentangle his drone from that of the engines. I went back to staring out the window. We angled across a range of old, worn-down mountains and struck out over an expanse of brown that ran to the eastern horizon, the grass of the steppe browned by the summer sun. The craft was descending. A river flashed beneath us. Then the industrial skirt of a modestly sized city. We landed at a military airbase that seemed to stretch on forever, since land here was as plentiful as it was flat, and there was no incentive to make things compact. A canvas-backed military drummond came out to collect us. We had no windows and could not see out the front, but through the aperture in the back, we watched the streets of an ancient, none-too-prosperous city ramifying in our dust. There were more animals on highways than we were used to, more people carrying things that in other places might have been entrusted to wheels. Of a sudden, things got dense and old, all yellow brick adorned with polychrome tiles. A heavy shadow passed over our heads, as if we were being strafed. But no, we had only passed through an arch in a thick wall. Three successive gates were closed and bolted behind us. The vehicle stopped on a tiled plaza. We clambered out to find ourselves in a courtyard, embraced by an ancient building 4 stories high, stone, brick, and wrought iron, softened by cascades of flowing vines on trunks as thick as my waist. A fountain in the center supplied water for these and for gnarled fruit trees growing in pots and casting pools of shade on what would otherwise have been an unpleasant place to stand.
"Welcome to the caravansary of Elkazg," said a voice in cultured Orth.
We turned to see an old man in the shade of a tree, a man who did not seem to belong here in the sense that he was of an ethnic group one would expect to find in another part of Arb.
"I am the Herator. My name is Magnath Forl, and I shall be pleased to serve as your host."
After introductions, Magnath Forl gave us a quick explanation of the history of Elkazg. I made no effort to follow most of this, since I only needed a few cues and hints to reconstruct what I had been taught of the place as a fid. It was one of the oldest Cartesian maths, founded circa negative 1500 by Fras and Sures, who had personally witnessed the fall of Baz, and known Ma Cartas. They had trekked across forests and mountains to build this thing more or less out in the middle of nowhere, on an oxbow lake a few miles from the main course of a river. A trade route from the east crossed the river not far away, close enough to give them access to commerce when they needed it, not so close as to be a distraction or a menace. Centuries later, a rough winter followed by a stormy spring caused some trouble involving ice dams that altered the course of the river and turned the Oxbow Lake back into an active channel. The trade route adapted, choosing Elkazg as the best place to make a crossing, since one of the side effects of the math had been the development of a relatively stable and prosperous secular community around its walls. A certain kind of mathic personality would then have abandoned the place for something more remote, perhaps up in the mountains. The wardens of Elkhazg, though, weren't that way, and had come to notice that the goods being carried on the backs of the beasts passing over the river included not just fabrics, furs, and spices, but books and scrolls. In a compromise that would have made Ma Cartus kick her way out of her chalcedony sarcophagus and come after them with a broken bottle, they had spun off a thriving side business in the form of a caravansary adjacent to the Math, and a ferry across the river. The one tariff that they charged was that the Fraas and Sewers of Elkhazg be allowed to make a copy of every book and scroll that passed through. Books were copied whose meanings they did not even know, but they interpreted their mandate somewhat broadly and began as well to make copies of the geometrical designs that they saw on fabrics, pottery, and other goods. For these Fraas and Sewers had a particular interest in plane geometry and in tiling problems. So, to make a long story somewhat shorter, Elkhazg had become synonymous in the minds of Theors all over the world with tiling problems. Important tile shapes and theorems about their properties were named after Fraas and Sewers who had lived here, or specific walls and floors in this complex. It was no longer a Math. At the time of the rebirth, its library had been dispersed and copied all over the world, and the building had fallen into private hands. It had not been made over into a new Math at the time of the reconstitution. Instead, as Magnath Forrell did not come out and say, but as was easy enough to figure out, it had been taken over by a long-lived complex of financial interests similar to, quite likely the same as, the one that ran Ekba